From Black Powder Headquarters and the Bojangles Studio at Three Falls Cabin in the North Georgia Mountains, it's time for O'Neill Outside. For anything in the outdoors, this is your source. Listen in and call the show with your comments or questions. And now, here's O'Neill.
Welcome back, everyone. It's 6 minutes after the hour, another hour of outdoors headed your way. We've got a lot of calls. We're going to get to every one of them. I've got some things I have to do first, however, and that is to tell you that this program is brought to you by, where's my list? Okay, well, I'll get to it in a minute. Our telephone numbers are 404-872-0750-800-972-8255. I've got my sponsor list somewhere. I promise I'll get to it. We're taking calls right now from people that you would like to meet in the outdoors. Yes, indeed. Maybe a story or a movie or two that you saw that has to do with the outdoors. I'd like to know your judgment on those. But the telephone number's for you to call, 404-872-0750 or 800-972-8255. My goodness, let's see. I can't find my list. Okay, it's on here somewhere. So welcome to the program, everyone. I hate to seem like a bumbling fool, but nevertheless, that appears to be the case sometimes. We're soliciting your calls for people that you would like to meet, the movies, and of course your fishing and tackle questions, your observations about the weather as it applies to the hunting season. We heard from Milton Crabapple today about how to cook squirrel. That was an interesting call, wasn't it? Did you hear that one? Milton always has a great contribution to the program. And later on, the most important part of the program in the second hour is the Medal of Honor tribute, in which we describe and identify in your behalf a Medal of Honor recipient. And we've been doing that for 5 or 6 years now, and we get a lot of positive comments, and it's my privilege to tell you about these guys. And it's one of these days I'll tell you the story about how that came about a few years ago, why the Medal of Honor tribute and how it came about. We'll have the Rocco's Prize question. And several things to do, including your calls. I can't get to them before the first break. This is O'Neill, 404-872-0750-800-972-8255. And if I can find my spot, oh, there it is right there. I'll get to it when I can.
I want to be a castaway and leave the world behind. Take a chop.
12 after the hour, you're listening to O'Neill Outside. We've got a lot of great calls on the line. We're going to get to every one of them at 12 after the hour. First of all, let's chat with Calvin from McDonough, Georgia. Good morning, Calvin.
Good morning, O'Neill. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Let me communicate. Before we talk, let me communicate with my engineer. I've got sound coming back, Houston. And there we go. Okay, 12 after the hour. Calvin, who is the person that you would like to meet?
That good old boy from Booger Bottom, Georgia, Michael Waddell.
Oh, that would be good. And I will tell you, I've met him on a couple occasions, and he is what he appears to be.
Yes, sir. And then the movie, it always tears me up, but it's Where the Red Fern Grows.
Where the Red Fern Grows. I don't know about that one.
It's an old boy. He saves up money and goes to town and buys these two red bone coon hounds.
Sneaks them back
to the house without his mama and daddy knowing. And he winds up raising them and hunts with them.
Oh, and how about that?
At the end of the movie, one of them dies and the other one dies of a broken heart.
Oh, I'll have to look at that. We always need good movies to see, and I appreciate you telling me about that. Where the Red Fern Grows.
Yes, sir.
Well, good deal.
It's also a book.
Mm. Well, that's probably been around a while, huh?
Oh, yes, sir. I think the movie was done like in the 70s.
Okay. Yeah, almost 50 years ago. Well, good. Hey, thanks, Calvin, for giving us a call and telling us about those two people. And you're right. I've met... him, Waddell, on several occasions, and he's a good guy.
And I just think he's hilarious, and he's got a lot of knowledge. I'd like to pick his brain for a little bit.
That's right. He's not afraid to carry on a conversation.
Yes, sir.
You bet. Hey, thanks for calling, pal.
All right, have a good day, sir.
You tip. There we go. Now, who's up next? Paul is calling. Paul is calling from Minnesota. Good morning, Paul. What do you say? This is O'Neill. Welcome to the program.
Good morning from snowy Minnesota.
Minnesota. I love the way you guys talk.
I don't have an accent. Everybody else does.
Yeah, neither do I, right? Okay.
That's right. So I'm calling about Alaskan Cruise.
Oh, okay. Did you register yet? You need to do that. There's only one space left.
I'm all booked and ready to go.
Oh, mighty fine. Good for you.
So last night on YouTube, I stumbled across a few shows. My life must be boring. A few shows about glaciers and calving of glaciers and things like that. So that got me excited again about the upcoming cruise.
Oh, man, it's in younger days, my wife and I, Gail and I, went to a lot. We cruised to the Caribbean a number of times. And then we've been on this Alaskan cruise two times, and those other cruises fade in comparison to this one.
Well, that's good to know. I've been to the Caribbean one time, but that's good to know because my wife and I are looking forward to this cruise.
Oh, it's just you can't stay awake long enough to see everything because, see, in that month you'll see the Northern Lights every evening, likely.
Well, that'll be exciting.
Well, do you see the Northern Lights from your home there or where you live in Minnesota?
I have not from my home, but okay. When I travel north, excuse me, to the northern part of the state, I have seen them before, yes.
Okay. Well, that's not very many people have, and you will on this cruise every night.
Well, that's good.
Oh,
that's
yes.
Good to know.
Glad to have
that's
you aboard, sir. Looking forward to it. And you got quite a deal, too, with this a lot of free stuff this time.
Well, that's good. I heard you mention that earlier in the show, and then I'm on the Princess Cruises right now, and got a lot of research to do to be prepared to go.
You betcha. Be prepared. I'm glad you called, Paul. I'm looking forward to our cruise on June of this year, and you'll get to meet Gail and celebrate with us our 55th wedding anniversary.
That's pretty exciting.
You bet. Glad you called, pal.
You have a good day.
You too. Thanks for calling. There we go. That's a good one. Oh, better drop the call better than that. And let's see. It's 17 after the hour. Let's talk to Donna is calling on O'Neill outside at 17 after the hour. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning. I enjoyed hearing from the couple from Black Hawk about their trout fishing, and it reminded me of a movie that I loved long ago. It's a Robert Redford movie called The River Runs Through It. It has all these scenes of fly fishing. Gorgeous pictures of the line sailing through the air and hitting the water, and scenes of, as I remember, canoeing in whitewater. And Brad Pitt is one of the sons. It's a story of relationships, of course. But
that's correct.
The scenery was so beautiful. It's called The River Runs Through It. And I just wanted to call and add that to your list to watch.
Well, thank you. I've seen that movie many times. It's very well done. And that is one of those, in just my personal judgment, that is one of those movies in which the movie is better than the book.
That's rare. Well,
yes,
I tell you,
it
inspired me long ago when I saw it in the early 90s, as I remember. Mm-hmm. It made me want to become a fly fisher person. I haven't done that yet, but now that I know that Black Hawk is up there on the SoQ, add it to my list of to-dos in the future. So I just wanted to tell you that sometimes these conversations connect up on your show, and I and they reminded me of the movie, and I thought, oh yeah, long ago, I thought it would be so cool to be a fly fisherman.
Well, good. Now, to be advised over and over again, I've got plenty of advice, that the Soquel River at Blackhawk Fly Fishing is the best mountain trout stream on the east coast of the United States.
That's not fly fishing. I don't even know enough to know.
Yes, that's Black. Now, that's where you need to arrange the trip, is through Blackhawk Fly Fishing.
Yes, yes. They that have is, all the equipment and
right,
everything. I got
everything.
That part,
and that is on the Soquel.
And
the way they manage that stream, I mean, this is an unusual case because the landowner owns the stream bed.
Oh, my.
So O'Neill can't go downstream off of their property and wade upstream and fish that river. I can't do that. So this is a managed river, like a managed pond.
I don't know what a managed river or a managed pond is.
Well, I mean,
just have on my to-do list to be fly
fishing enough
at some point. And when I heard that they have the whole package, including lunch, I thought, maybe. But it reminded me of this movie. You were soliciting stories about movies that are memorable, and that movie inspired me to want to fly fish because it was
wonderful,
such a beautifully photographed movie. And I thought, now that I heard the couple talk about it, maybe I can actually someday do it. I just want to throw my suggestion out. It's a beautiful movie, the photography. Robert Redford does gorgeous stuff.
That is extremely well done. I would only comment that those wonderful sunset photos of this young man with this beautiful line and rod management that you see with these big...
Yes, in Montana, the scene, the sundown.
Yes.
Those
okay.
aren't real? Those are not real?
Well, it's real, but that's not Brad Pitt doing that. That's
it's
someone else.
Too elegant, yes.
It's too good. You don't learn to do that just for a movie. No. Brad Pitt is a great actor and all of those things, but he didn't do this.
Well, it looked picturesque, and it looked so elegantly thrown or cast or whatever you say. I just
wonderfully
it was
done.
Very inspiring. So long ago, but I just wanted to say, now
indeed,
that they called in, and I thought, yes, I should call and throw in my movie that
a river runs
me
through it. Well done.
Sir.
Thank you for calling, Donna.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Have a good week.
You bet. Okay, when we return, the radio prize package, and we'll be back. And a little bit of chicken. 25 after. Welcome back, everyone. We got a couple of calls we need to get to, and then we have the Medal of Honor tribute in just a moment. Who's been holding on the longest here? Let's try for John, calling from Lilburn. Good morning, John. You're on O'Neill Outside. Welcome to the program.
Hey, O'Neill. How you doing?
Lovely.
Listen, I've in my backyard, I have had owls forever.
Okay.
And I've got one. I don't know if you know this, but I've got one, and I can't do this very well, but his sound was, and he forever was in my backyard. I love listening to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he has since been replaced, or seems to be, one replaced by one that just goes, you're just a standard owl.
Okay.
I wonder, are they different owls? Are they migratory? Am I missing something?
No,
I know
probably.
It sounds silly, but I love the sound of owls.
The first one that you called, and you do a good job of that, that is a barred owl.
Barred owl, okay.
Barred owl. And that's got nothing to do with a barn. It's because he has stripes on his.
B-A-R-R-E-D, yeah.
Yeah, he has stripes on his breast feathers. So that he's a barred owl. The second one that you talked about is either a juvenile barred owl or a hoot owl.
He sounds pretty big. I was just wondering, you know, because I like my barred owl a lot better. It's a prettier sound, and he'd come in closer.
In the springtime, do you ever hear that barred owl cackle?
Oh yeah.
Oh, I love the sound of the owls.
I
live up here
female.
In the mountains, and we hear them all the time.
Yeah, I thought it was a female. In the spring,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not sure if it is or not, but they do kick up a ruckus.
Oh, yes, absolutely. They are extremely territorial.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering if that barred owl had left, because he would get real close to the house,
mm-hmm.
and my brother could hear him over the telephone.
Oh, no and, kidding.
Yeah, it was just wonderful. And
how about that?
I haven't heard him in about a month, and it just disappoints me. But I figured if anybody knew, you might. So,
well, I'm guessing usually.
Yeah,
I'm strictly an amateur. I'm no biologist, but I've spent a little time in the woods. But I'm not afraid about taking a guess.
Yeah, well, I Googled it and they didn't answer my question. So I figured I'm gonna call the next best expert. Yeah.
Okay,
that'd be you.
Yeah, you can hear a lot of the bird calls and sounds and so forth over the internet now, and look them up, and it's quite fun. Anywhere from frog calls to bird calls and hawks and crows and their language. It's quite interesting.
It is very interesting.
You bet.
Well, enjoy your show, and thank you so much for taking the call.
You bet. Thank you. I appreciate you taking the time to call.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you, sir. Now let's talk to, let's chat with Jim. Good morning, Jim. You're on O'Neill Outside.
Good morning, Professor O'Neill.
Uh-oh. What's going on, sir?
I just want to say thank you, number one, for all the information you impart to us and to a question you had. I don't think I could ask for anybody better than you and maybe three or four others that you have fished and hunted with in your lifetime, because they would be so much information along with you. Now, number one, I want to say thank you for encouraging us to get in touch with our DNR agents and the DNR.
Mm-hmm.
We called, and of course, as you well know, you've talked to me long enough, and you know that we don't bait on our property.
Right.
It's not that it's illegal. I know it's legal, but we go a different route.
Mm-hmm.
But we were able, through your information, and encouraged to go ahead and call the DNR, and they put us in touch with the Enfield North Georgia associate biologist.
Oh.
And he is coming to meet us today and talk to the whole group in our hunting club and tell us the benefits and the downfalls of having food plots instead of baiting. So
okay.
I just want to thank you for that, because they've done the whole thing. I mean, the WMA we're going to is taking care of a room. It was free. They're taking care of coffee for us. We're bringing in donuts and some other things, and I think we'll have about 15 or 20 people there.
Wonderful.
So hopefully we'll be able to get our guys more acclimated and more accustomed to what's going on. The
Good.
Biggest thing that really scared me to death is when the biologist told me that corn is only 2 to 7% of what the protein a deer needs, that a deer is required, his body does, 22 to 28% protein per day. That just blew me away. So that's one reason we wanted to have him in. And I just want to let you know that you really do a lot for us. I'm not quite as old as you, but I'm catching up with you. It won't be long. I'll be 70, so I'm chasing you every step of the way.
Okay. Well, you're awfully complimentary, and it points to something that you've heard me say, and I'm sure you believe and already practice it. The more you know, the more you understand about wildlife, hunting, fish, and the little critters that are all out there, the more you are capable of enjoying the outdoors.
Yes, sir. It's not just the kill. It's also the excitement of seeing a 2-3-year-old. If it's left alone another year or 2 years, it's really something else to see. And, you know, I've been hunting that way for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But trying to get some of the others that are about two and a half generations younger than myself, it's almost like instant grits, instant cereal, instant oatmeal. Everybody wants just to tear up my bag, add water, and there you go. And hunting is not that. You miss the trees. You miss the different browse, persimmons, wild cherries, the whole bit. And people just don't get that anymore, because they want instant gratification. They see a lot programs, and in 20 minutes they've got there, they're in their stand, and they have made their harvest. And that's not the way it really happens in the wild.
Absolutely. Let me give you something for you to think. This will be long term, In the past century, the chestnut trees underwent a blight and killed all of the chestnut trees in the southeastern part of the country. There is a chestnut tree now developed by Chestnut Hills Outdoors that is blight resistant. So look into it. Yes, you can plant chestnut trees now that are blight resistant, and they'll mature in 4 years, and they will. You will have a harvest of chestnut trees and chestnuts on the ground, and the deer love them.
Oh, I know. I mean, I have seen guys that have got some real old chestnut trees that probably only one left on their property. Mm-hmm. And when it does, I mean, he's got pictures of on the trail cam to where they're in there. And I said, my gosh, how do they move them things around their mouth and get all them stickers off? He said, well, they do it. And he said, man, yes, they'll just stay out there for hours.
They love now, that. What, and go ahead, please.
What is the name of that chestnut tree again, please?
Chestnut Hills Outdoors.
Okay. I'm writing it down. That's the reason I asked.
Yes, Chestnut Hills Outdoors, and give them, they ship chestnut, not mature, of course, but
right.
You know they're 3 or 4 feet tall,
right.
And they mature just in a couple of 3 years, and you got chestnut trees on your property.
I tell you what, this is the kind of stuff that a lot of guys are not interested. I'm in more natural stuff that they can get to. You can fertilize it, and it's just something that is a benefit.
Well, you know, and one of the subjects of your call about the Department of Natural Resources, I like to deal in absolutes, and I'm here to tell you and everybody else listening, if you're in Georgia, Alabama, the Southeast, well, wherever, I would bet you money that your Department of Natural Resources, the land that they manage, the wildlife that they secure for you and transplant and manage is underutilized by the hunter.
I agree with you. I agree with you. I mean, this guy was just excited that we would contact him. I mean, I'm like, it was like he found a buddy or something. I'm like, holy catfish. Everywhere else I've called is like, we'll give you a number, and if you get somebody, that's fine, you know. But not the DNR. I mean, they explicitly put me through to him and put me right straight to his phone. And he's up there. You may even know him. His name is David Reed.
I know David.
Okay, David. And that's what everybody told me. Said, if you want to know, said David spends all his hours in the field unless someone requests him to come and speak to him. So I got up with him, asked him what dates he had available and everything else. And I mean, they've been more than accommodating. It just really blows me away when you talk to some of the other people and they act like, well, maybe we'll do it, maybe we won't. But I mean, he jumped on that thing like a dog on a rabbit.
Well, you know, one of the other things that's underutilized, not only in Georgia, but in most states, and that is the wildlife management areas are underutilized also. Literally millions of acres of land and forest and wildlife therein that no one ever hunts, no one ever investigates, no one ever looks into. You don't have to have your own lease.
No.
There's plenty of land.
There is, and all it takes is a little consideration when you go in to make sure there's somebody else not in that area. And if there
That's
is,
right.
Try to find you another area to go to.
You bet. You bet. I'm glad you called. Terrific subject matter.
Well, Professor, it's always a pleasure, and it's a highlight of my day to get to talk to you. Thank you very much.
You're very kind. Have a great weekend, pal. I'll see you soon.
Yes, sir.
There you are. This is O'Neill with O'Neill Outside. We've got Hank the Yank coming up, and then the Medal of Honor tribute, and we'll be back. Well, we've got a couple of calls we need to get to. Welcome back, everyone. Before we get to the Medal of Honor tribute, and it's always a pleasure to speak to Hank the Yank on O'Neill Outside. Good morning, sir. What's going on?
Hey, buddy. How are you today?
Outstanding.
Well, I'm in the middle of, we're just starting show season for us this time of year, you know. I'll be up in New Jersey next weekend in Atlanta. We got the big Atlanta fly fishing show the weekend after. Mm-hmm. So for the next 2 weeks, we are just locked up doing, you know, updating and getting seminars together. And, you know, we'll get to see a lot of friends both up north and from the southeast down here in the next 2 weeks, which is always fun.
Oh, yeah. Good for you.
You coming to the fly fishing show in Atlanta on the 31st and the 1st?
I'm going to give it a try.
Well, good. You know, I know they're expecting you to do a casting demo this year.
Yeah, that's right. That'll be the day. I remember the last time I saw a casting demo from, oh, my goodness, what was his name? Your favorite.
Lefty.
Yeah.
Lefty Cray.
Yes. Lefty did a casting demo with half of the rod.
You know, he's been known to do it with just one-fourth of the rod, and I will tell you, I have not seen this, but I have friends that have told me he went to their club and peeled the line off of a fly reel and made a 60-foot cast without a rod.
Yes. Oh, no.
That's kidding. With no rod, just using just the line in his hand.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Is that not crazy?
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
That's well, listen, yeah. I want to tell you, when you get a chance, I sent you a text with a picture of a friend of mine up in Virginia.
Okay.
Who's a very, very incredible guide and fly angler. His name is Blaine Chocolate. And the picture is of him in Virginia in the James River. He fishes the James and the New Rivers, both.
Okay.
And he's a muskie guide.
Oh, my God.
Now, I don't have to tell you how hard that is to catch a muskie. Well, he does it on the fly rod.
Oh, my goodness.
And he had two customers out with him. And the picture is of him holding two tails of fish that are between 45 and 50 inches long. They caught doubles on the fly. The fish of 10,000 casts.
That was my next question. They say, how many casts per fish?
Right.
10,000,
well,
huh?
That's what they say, but I got to tell you, with the fly, it's these
more
fish
than
eat the fly. These fish eat the fly really well. He has been averaging during muskie season, which he started back in November. His muskie season goes November through probably around the middle of March before they start spawning. Once they spawn, he lays off those fish just from a conservation standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been averaging probably 3 to 4 bites a day and averaging 1 to 2 muskie on the fly every day for his anglers. Wait till you see this picture. You won't believe it. I just sent it to you. When you get off the air, you can take a peek.
I will do
that. Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to tell you my fishing. I don't even want to talk about my fishing because I'll make a long story short and just say that Lanier, the fish are deep, the bait is deep, everything is deep, and I am going on canceling trips 6 weeks in a row now. I've canceled 24 trips.
Oh, my goodness.
My last 24 trips, and I've never done that in 22 years down here. I've guided 20 years down here, and I've never had a season like this where the fish are this deep. So, and interesting, it's not just Lanier. It's all the lakes along in the southeast. There's something that happened with weather patterns this year where, for whatever reason, the plankton is deep, which means the threadfin shad are deep, which means the stripers are deep, because the whole ecosystem this year is deep. And it must have had to do with, I am imagining it had to do with lake turnover. I've just been canceling all my trips because I just refuse to take somebody out knowing that they're not going to catch fish. The only way I will take them is if they just say, look, we want to go. We don't care if we just catch a few spotted bass, but if you want to catch stripers, you know, I can't make that kind of a promise in good faith right now.
Yeah,
so I'm moving on. But the trout fishing down the Chattahoochee has been excellent. I've been getting reports from a couple of the guide services, like River Through Atlanta, with Chris Scally. And he said that they are catching more 15 to 18-inch brown trout in our river system this year than they've ever seen before. And as you know, The brown trout are stream-born fish. I would call them wild, but a wild fish means that they were wild from the get-go 100 years ago. And you know that brown trout were not indigenous to the Chattahoochee River. No. But we have not stocked the brown trout in this river in 15 years. So these are all stream-born or what you and I would call near wild fish. And
yes,
we're seeing a lot of those fish.
15 to 18. That's good.
Isn't that incredible?
Yes, it is.
That's really great. So the DNR and the river keeper down here in through the city of Atlanta and through, you know, Buford Dam and below has just done a wonderful job keeping the river clean so that these fish can grow and just stay healthy. We've got a really wonderful trout fishery down here. And then finally, you know, I spoke to my buddy Jimmy Harris from Unicoi Outfitter. Mm-hmm. And their trout fishing up in North Georgia has been very, very good, along with their shoal bass fishing the Chattahoochee up in North Georgia. He said that their fishing this winter has been sensational. And he told me this on his way down. Yeah, I guess yesterday the boat show started here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So he was on his way down to do a seminar at the boat show, and he was telling me that their fishing has been really, really good, and we wanted to pass that on to all the listeners.
Fantastic. Glad you called, my good friend. You be safe on your trip. Enjoy.
Okay, pal. We'll speak to you in the next week or so.
You bet. See you soon, I hope. There we go. Now let's talk to Paul in Atlanta. Let me bring Paul up here. Good morning, Paul. Thanks for hanging on.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good, Paul. Thanks for hanging on. Sorry it took so long.
Thank you. I'm calling about venison. Some people think that we're talking about Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, but I'm talking about the Georgia, Alabama. There's some venison that is donated to food pantries. Mm-hmm. You have to have a public health inspection. And there's some weighing stations. There's one in Cartersville. They do a good job up by 75.
And you can locate all those places on the internet. Will lead you to those places.
Yeah,
that are approved.
That's right.
Yes,
that's right. Or you can look for their sign on state roads. Mm-hmm. And there are also a few of them advertise in some places. But we just want to thank people that are donating venison to food pantries, and I think there are tens of thousands of pounds that go to the Atlanta Food Bank near Bankhead Highway, and some people like fish, some people like red meat, some people are vegetarian. You need choices, and you need to know how these areas are managed and who has the legal authority over these areas.
Right. That's the key, that you're just not just showing up. You're donating it to a place and some personnel that make the best approved use of the venison. Yes.
It's better to have 50 pounds of venison in the freezer than having a deer on your windshield.
Absolutely. Well put. Well put, and it happens all too often, as a matter of fact. We've got just about 1 million deer in the state of Georgia alone. And, you know, of course, too, there's still a deer being harvested in Alabama. That season goes all the way through January. Interesting, huh?
Well, where are the main areas in Alabama?
The entire state season extends because they have a very late rutting season. Look at them up on the internet, and you can locate that. It'll tell you all about it. Oh yes, absolutely. You have to have a hunting license, just like always, but. But the rutting season and deer season in Alabama is different than in Georgia. Much later. I got to go, pal. Paul, thanks for calling. I appreciate that. And there we go. And now it's time for our high point of the program, that being the Medal of Honor presentation.
Honor, courage, and strength of character. These qualities are embodied by the recipients of the Medal of Honor. Now let's recognize this week's Medal of Honor recipient on O'Neill Outside.
Sergeant Kyle White, U.S. Army, Afghanistan, November 2007. Specialist White and his comrades were returning to an outpost, traversing a narrow path when they were ambushed by enemy forces from elevated positions. Pinned against a steep mountain face, Specialist White and his fellow soldiers were completely exposed to enemy fire. Specialist White returned fire and was briefly knocked unconscious when a rocket-propelled grenade impacted near him. When he regained consciousness, another round impacted him, embedded small pieces of shrapnel in his face and head. Shaking off his wounds, he noticed one of his comrades lying wounded nearby. Without hesitation, he exposed himself to enemy fire in order to reach the soldier and provide medical aid. Applying his own belt as an additional tourniquet, Specialist White was able to stem the flow of blood, and he actually saved that soldier's life. Noticing that his and other soldiers' radios were inoperative, Specialist White exposed himself to enemy fire again and again in order to secure a radio from a deceased comrade. He was taken over. Then he provided information and updates to friendly forces, allowing precision airstrikes to stifle the enemy's attack and ultimately permitting a medical evacuation for him and his comrades. His extraordinary heroism and selflessness above and beyond the call of duty are in keeping with the highest traditions of military service and reflect great credit upon himself and the United States Army. Sergeant Kyle White, Afghanistan, November 2007. 52 after the hour, this is O'Neill. That, to me, is the high point of our program every week, and I hope you are reminded. You may research the Medal of Honor tributes, the descriptions, the names, the places, all of those things by visiting O'NeillOutside.com, and right there, centrally located on the home page, you will find a medallion on the right-hand side. If you'll click there, it will take you to the Medal of Honor site. And I can assure you it's some good reading for true heroes, people that were, that voluntarily gave of their health, their bodies, and eventually, in many cases, about 60% of the time, their lives for their comrades in arms, and ultimately us for the freedom that we enjoy. Okay, got to go to a break. We've got one more call there that we'll handle in any case, but this is O'Neill. You've been listening to Outdoors for almost 2 hours, and we'll have a greeting for you when we return. Less cold in. 57 after the hour. This is O'Neill. Shameless self-promotion coming up. If you'll visit O'NeillOutside.com, the bottom of the homepage, you'll find the information for our trip to Alaska. We have deals in there that's worth about $1,300 per cabin. We have one cabin left. Only one. It's June the 14th, 2020. It's our celebratory return to Alaska. It's the best cruise I've certainly ever been on, and I've done it a couple of times, and Gail and I will be celebrating our 55th wedding anniversary when we do that. Secondly, then, too, go to O'NeillOutside.com. Waypoint TV and several VOD networks, and you'll be able to listen to the O'Neill Outside podcasts. Okay? It's worthwhile. And you can also have the opportunity to purchase at the homepage of O'NeillOutside.com. You'll be able to purchase O'Neill Outside, People and Places Along the Way. It's my book. Now, I got to warn you, this is not John Steinbeck. It's not Ernest Hemingway. It's just O'Neill. But I think you'll enjoy it. And I, if you buy it off the website, I will autograph it and personalize it, and I will send it to you. It's 58 and a half after the hour. We've had another couple of hours of outdoors and an outstanding radio program only because you telephone us and share your outdoor experiences, and we can learn from that. I hope you have a pleasant weekend. This is O'Neill, and we'll be back on the air next week, hopefully. And we'll entertain your calls and talk about fishing and hunting and outdoors and conservation and the Department of Natural Resources and state parks and all kinds of things via WSB 95.5 FM and 750 AM and the Sports Broadcast Radio Network all across the country, from Seattle to San Francisco and L.A., from Maine to Florida, O'Neill Outside. So, I enjoyed the program. I hope you did, and that you got something from it. And for getting up early in the morning, Georgia, and joining us, I thank you. This is O'Neill. I'll see you next week. Georgia, the whole